Welcome to the Resource People Podcast, presented to you by Australian Resources and Energy Group, AMA. The Resource People Podcast brings to life the stories behind the people, workforces and companies of our great industry.
It's Tara from AMA, and I'm so delighted to have your company on this episode today because it's about a topic that's so important to all of us. Our guest today is Monique Slade. She's the general manager at Sino Health, and we're going to get a unique perspective, a provider and a partner perspective on an incredibly important topic, the mental health and well-being of the people in the resource and energy industry.
Welcome to Resource People Podcast, Monique.
Thank you for having me, Tara. I'm so excited to be here today.
Well, we're so excited to chat with you on such an important and critical topic to the resources and energy industry, which is mental health and well-being of our people and our workforces. We hear so much from employers, what they're doing to support their people, that we wanted to look behind that a little bit and look to who they might partner with and who they are partnering with to deliver program support, intervention, and preventative elements. So yep. I'd really like to start by hearing you tell us a little bit about Sino and what you do to support and partner with the resource and energy industry.
Yeah, I'm really excited to share so much of what Sino does. And I'll just give you a little bit of a background if I could on Sino.
Please.
So we were created, probably the best way to say it, in 2012. And it was off the back of our then CEO, Matt Hornsby, who was working in the world of elite sport with St Kilda Football Club. And he saw that there was a lot of accidents and injuries that were occurring, especially in the mining and frontline industry sectors, that he knew he could bring, you know, the systems and the technology from this world of elite sport into these industries to actually help improve the longevity and lifestyle of these workers. And in the evolution of Sino over the course of 2012 to now, we've had a really big impact and noticed the impact on not just the physical improvements that this world of elite sport has brought in, but also the mental impacts. So if we look at the holistic approach, Sino is mental health and physical health in creating positive behaviour change. And that's our basic ethos on what we're looking to do for humans across the board. Not to just look at the physical side, which a lot of industry specialists do, and not to just look at the mental health or well-being side, it's to combine the two. Because we know that our whole body and our whole self goes together. So we're, you know, intrigued to not pull it apart and just be specific, but to look at the whole overarching package of us as a provider. And we've had huge success in the last 10 years, and especially in the last, I have to say, 18 months with the change to the landscape with COVID coming in and how that really has affected the mining industry, but also our corporate industries across the board globally.
Wow. And I'd love to dive down a little bit about how you specifically support resource and energy employers. You know, I understand that you work with lots of different companies in our industry. What kind of approach do you take in this holistic balance in terms of physical and mental health from a preventative and proactive side?
Yeah, absolutely. So working with all of our clients is more often than not a prescriptive. We go in and sit down with them and actually look at what it is that they need. So our programs that we run at Sino offer frontline intervention pieces. And that's our baseline program, our WIP program. So this is around injury prevention, health and well-being, and looking at how people are moving, eating, breathing, and sleeping. And we take these programs all the way through to our executive leadership programs. And these aren't the technical training. These are the how do we get people to move beyond themselves and be great leaders? And that's about actually knowing their physical and mental, and I guess for a better word, spiritual well-being. And ensuring that we lead from the top, but also cover off the whole of the workforce and make sure that the same message of holistic approach to health and well-being is covered off throughout all of the business. And I think that what we've been so fortunate with in terms of our clients over the last 3 years is they see that themselves. They don't want to just work on one area of their business. They no longer want to just work on injury prevention or get their statistics down in that area. They no longer just want to have some leadership programs and even just tick a box. There's this understanding that an organization is a family, and there are so many facets of it that they need to make sure that, or they want to make sure that they're giving everyone the best opportunity to learn about themselves, to be at the highest performing teams that they can, to do it well, and to reach every person on the level they're starting at. So not to have this one size fits all. And I think that that's where Sano really sets ourselves apart from, I guess, even our competitors, is that we have an approach to looking at the whole holistic well-being of the industry and the individuals.
I can't not ask you about, from your unique perspective, looking across lots of different employers in this industry, what do you think the state of the industry is in terms of health and wellness?
I think it's definitely improved. I think the understanding of well-being in itself, and mental well-being, mental health, and the physical health has stepped up probably in the last 5 years. We're no longer seeing industry saying this is an isolation, or it's something you need to do at home by yourself. We're seeing that a lot of great organizations, and especially leaders, see the value of giving the tools and information to their cohorts, their staff, about how to live their best selves across the board, from the physical to the mental, and spending money on this, spending money in this space. The uptake is a workforce that's well, that's engaged, that's high performing, and that's, you know, at one point we're seeing the loyalty, the return on investment is that the people aren't actually leaving those organizations. A sense of loyalty comes out of the fact that there's an investment in them.
Wow, and that investment piece is so important, isn't it? From multiple levels, you know, you talk about investment from the companies, but then the individual feel like they're being invested in personally, not just a kind of tick box, broad scale approach. Well, let me bring you back. We've used the word high performance a little bit, and it's obviously been a foundation through your background and the forming of Sano. Can you tell me what elements of that has been brought through into the way that you approach and support employers having that high performance athletics background?
The reason why we have the high performance background was obviously from Matt Hornsby. And I'll be really honest with you, I don't come from the world of elite sport personally. My drive and passion in this space, and the reason I'm the general manager of Sano, came from a bit of a different perspective. So for me, myself, I suffered from depression after the birth of my second child. And at that time, I was running my own advertising agency. I was working extensive hours. I was flying along corporately and emotionally, it felt like, but I didn't read the signs that I was actually falling apart. I tried to hide it a lot. And I realized that when I finally embraced what I needed to in terms of getting help, seeking help and speaking to the GP and facing what was going on for me, there was a disconnect. So my GP was brilliant. I spoke to a psychologist who was brilliant. I was put on medication, which I didn't want to do, but it was the advice that I was given. And I did that. But then I looked at the other side of my life and I kept saying, what about what I'm eating? Is that affecting it? What about how much sleep I've had? Or should I exercise? Because it does make me feel better. And there was this disconnect. So I went on a bit of a journey then and worked through many industries and did a lot of study and research. Was fortunate enough to learn a lot about resilience and train people as a executive coach in this space and move on. And then I found Sano through a dear friend of mine, Kane Johnston, who does come from the world of elite sport and has been working for Sano for 6 years. And it brought together the two missing pieces for me. Sano was looking at mental well-being and physical health and combining those two to have this high performance individual. And when we talk about the world of elite sport, what I sort of was a little bit, had a bit of trepidation around was, I'm not an elite athlete, so how is this going to work for me?
Relevant. And
yeah, and the point behind it that a lot of people at first probably feel the same as I did was, it's not about that. It's about taking the best understanding, the greatest technologies, and applying it to anyone at whatever point they're at in their life right now. So for me, it was, okay, I'm starting behind so-and-so, but this learning for me and this information is taking me to the next level. Wow, this is exactly what I want to be part of. And I think that that's what we're continually looking at doing and always improving on, is that we draw from leading experts globally. We're drawing from the people who are already doing the research in the physical, who are already looking at how our breathing and our can improve our mental health and our physical health, how meditation in itself is actually transforming not just the sporting world, but corporate worlds and even our children. So there's a global effect of what we do. And I think if we can draw from the experts and apply it to the industries that we're passionate about, especially the mining industry, then we're at the forefront of creating humans that are change. Enjoying their everyday. Yeah, but just enjoying your everyday because you're living your best self.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing your personal journey, Monique, with us, because it really informs your approach and then, you know, really highlights where Sano comes from in terms of approaching health and wellness in, as you say, both corporate world and people's personal life. You touched on that the industry has, in the last 5 years, you've seen a big change. And at AMA, we also see that the industry has been on a real journey from a mental health and wellness perspective, and in particularly in the last 10 years, but 5 years in terms of the amount of proactive.
Definitely.
Yeah, definitely. But I want to just ask from a, you know, from a provider's perspective, what are, you know, what do you see as the challenges and the blockers for resource employers in terms of the support that they want to so desperately to provide to their people?
The number one thing is always budget. You will see, and I think that there is a general shift in inspiring leaders who are ensuring that there is an amount of budget set aside for this particular space, which is whole of life. You know, you can do all the training in other areas and capabilities and technicalities and technical issues, but we've got human beings essentially who are doing their best every day to enjoy their life and enjoy their job. So when we see spend going into this area, there's excitement for us. Also recognition around the different elements of well-being. So especially around mental health, which we're talking to mental well-being at the moment, I think the stigma has really come off that, especially in the mining sector, probably in the last 2 to 3 years. I think the conversations in relation to, you know, it's okay to put your hand up and say, I'm not coping. It's okay that you'll be supported by your organization and making sure, and we're seeing it, that organizations stand by their word. They are supporting those people who are struggling. They are supporting them getting back to work and helping their families. And I think that that in itself shows is a really great change and trend, hopefully globally, but definitely nationally in Australia, that we're no longer burying our heads in the sand and saying well-being's a, you know, the happy clappy club. Well-being is actually a really important part of our lives that we need to spend time investing in.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're hearing more and more from employers, particularly through COVID, and I will ask you some questions about COVID shortly, that they're providing proactively more and more support for their employees. But what we're interesting, Monique, what we're hearing is that they're not seeing the uptake that they would like to see, or that they would like to think that they would have seen through some of these proactive programs and support programs to employees. Do you have any kind of insights or comments on that?
We've seen similar in some regard. And look, I speak at the moment for myself from being in Victoria and obviously working from here and going through what we're going through, while the, you know, our colleagues in Perth are in a completely different situation. I think a lot of organisations are really actively caring genuinely about their people, really caring and really investing and spending time and money and effort in making sure that they are supporting them in all the different areas that will help them get back to work or help them working from home and the different challenges in COVID. I think there may be, well, what we've seen is a little bit of online digital fatigue. And we obviously haven't done research into it, but our sort of view at the moment is people's days are actually a lot busier because they're not actually moving around, or what they're accounted for, you know, in the blocks that you can pop into the diary now with the Zoom calls and the Teams calls and the catch up. So taking that downtime isn't really there as much. So I think people are exhausted. But then I think at the same time, maybe people are actually coping and they are investing in this space themselves. And we don't know what individuals are doing at home. We do see a lot of different trends on social media where families are engaging in meditation and families are engaging in even Wim Hof methods around having ice baths and having cold showers and utilising different techniques of well-being. So it's definitely now out there. Whether or not it's coming through the corporation or the engagements from them, or if it's just individual.
Yeah, and we also hear that companies are getting a lot of loyalty and goodwill when their employers, you know, do, as you talk about, that caring and that support and that investment in these sorts of programs. They're getting a lot of benefits from their workforces feeling supported and cared for. What we're seeing really interestingly is that it hasn't really translated to uptake, which I guess over time we'll really see whether that's been a good thing, you know, whether it is that people are doing things themselves or that they're they're accessing the tools in different ways. But yeah, we've also been challenged, as you say, by the interventions being very much having to be digital and having not being as in person as well. So whether that's a barrier or whether that's something that's positive ongoing remains to be seen.
What a really interesting one. If I could just tell you something on that, it reminds me of what we've just done in this space of COVID, Tara. That we run our executive leadership courses and programs, and the executive leadership side is usually run as a retreat as well. So it's an incorporation of a 6 to 12 month program with off-site retreats. And it started 2.5 years ago, and its uptake was huge instantaneously. And we're really proud of the outcomes of this. When we hit COVID, there was a really quick thinking style of our leadership team going, oh my goodness, one side of our business could be completely gone. And it's the one side that really we see such massive traction and change in organizations for investing in this. And we managed to digitize it, for a better word, and find a way that we could actually host these sessions for half day and full day sessions online. And we thought, is this really going to work? And is this really going to have the same impact? And are we really going to get the depth of understanding and vulnerability from, you know, being online? And we've hosted these, the feedback, Tara, has been the same, if not better. And I truly say that our, and because the teams we're dealing with in this space who have continued to do this digitally are global, they've just said it was the greatest way to feel reconnected again, because it was really honest and it was really about me again. And going through all the, we go through breathing methodologies, we have vulnerability conversations. So seeing people really open up again, we realize that there is a space for it digitally and it does work versus, okay, let's just stop this and hope for the best. So I think there is space for it in this world, and there will be, for people to connect and make sure that they are taking care of themselves, whether it be face-to-face or whether it be virtually.
And, you know, for some people that may be a positive outcome, being able to have the comfort of being in their own home or their own environment, to then be able to allow themselves access to that kind of program, maybe giving them a level of comfort in their environment allows them to then be able to, you know, get a lot out of the types of experiences that you're providing them.
And the other side of it is having people working remotely. So we've got people remotely working online sites all over the world, you know, and they're away from their families for a period of time. For us to reconnect them to their organization and reconnect them to their teams and to their leaders, and be open and honest and help them through any issues, and also see them really performing at that high level, it gives us confidence that it works. And it gives them, I think, that confidence that, like you said before, they're being cared for, they're being valued, and they know they're supported.
Well, that's a really positive outcome. And I do want to ask you broadly about positive outcomes, and before we get to talking about some of the impacts of COVID, what are the sorts of positive outcomes, both at an organisational level and indeed a personal level, that you see through the activities and programs you run in the industry?
There's been so many. Because I, like I said before, I don't come from the world of elite sport, so I'm always really intrigued when you see someone who has real blocks and real refusals, or just doesn't want to look at the physical side of their well-being and just, nope, sorry, I'm not interested, start a journey with us and feel confident and comfortable enough to do so. One of the gentlemen we worked with in a transport industry, and I'm not going to name names, but he was around 5'8" and he would have been 145 kilos. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at somebody whose lifespan and where he was at wasn't looking great. He was very unhealthy. He was a smoker, and he knew it, and he'd known it for years. He just said, I'm really not that interested in changing. And when we got deeper and down into the conversations with him about why he was even considering doing it, he was like, oh, partly because I need to for work, because my back's buggered and I can't do X. And then the secondary piece, the truth came out, was around his family. He said, I've got a grandson. And, you know, I don't know if I'm going to see him grow up, and I can't kick the ball with him, and I can't play with him. So for me, seeing him go on an 18-month journey, and now he's at 87 kilos, and he will call you and he'll cry, and he will say, I never thought this was important to me. I never thought that I would feel like this. I never thought I'd be able to do these things in my life that they weren't even on my benchmark or radar to do. Mm. The challenges he's put himself through now. So that's the physical side. But then even for me, you see the mental change, the switch, the belief in self, the confidence to challenge things, the vulnerability to have gone through it in the first place, which I think is just so huge. That for me is the reason why I love what I do. And it's to support people and see people go through changes like I went through, I guess. It's, you know, when you go through something that completely transforms your point of view and your life from where you thought you were going to go to where you are, I want to see other people go down that journey as well. And, you know, even if it's only one or two people that I can help support, you know, I've done my job and I feel really proud of that.
I'm sure that people listening to this got inspiration from that story. It's absolutely incredible. And then interested from a resource and energy perspective, what kind of programs and outcomes do you see that make a big impact? We've got FIFO operations, we have extended rosters, yeah, offshore, we have the challenges that come from people being away from their support base. We have all of those different types of things at play in the resource and energy industry. So what do you see that Sano does in terms of a service provision or for a program perspective that you see has positive outcomes?
There's so many. Again, I think one of the ones be around our FIFO and remote working and being away from home and family. I mean, I'm assuming you've done it as well in your life, as do I. I travel and I understand some components of it, but not the true extent of what it's like on roster year on year, in and out. And I think Sano prides itself on ensuring that our WIP program, which is our wellbeing, injury prevention and health, and for that program, it's around learning breathing techniques to reduce our stress and to be able to regulate our emotional control. I mean, these are things that, you know, 10, 15 years ago, if you talked about emotions on a mind site, you would have been laughed off. It would have been, where are you coming from? But to now have these people, so many people on site engaged and understanding and actively participating in, you know, situational awareness and their emotional intelligence and how they build on that and, you know, things down to injury prevention, but this is around how do I take care of myself first? And how am I taking care of myself? What we love the most is when it goes back home and you get the phone calls from the partners or the husbands or wives saying, you know, my husband or wife's come back from site and we're doing these walks together and we're engaging in this new style of eating together. We've done our breathing exercises. We're meditating together. Our children are doing it with us. Thanks. It's just, for me, it's, again, this is a positive behavior change. We're not telling people not to do something. We're just giving them options and sharing resources of other ways of being that if they choose to take up and they see the benefit, they do. And especially in this sector, but to be able to do one thing at home and then follow through and do it on site, it's not just a benefit at home, but you're seeing the benefit in the workforce. People are, especially in mining, you know, fatigue and heat and exhaustion are a huge issue. So if we can get people to have self-awareness, these are where these things are going to be reduced. And we see that as well. So it's an exciting time for us.
In terms of what you see, in terms of those positive outcomes and benefits, what sort of things do you do to report the outcomes? Because some of these things are really difficult and long-term change that these programs and interventions are having on people's lives and having on the workforce. So what are the common kind of things that you guys use as reporting and performance indicators?
Yeah, it's hard for us. And there's some parts that we obviously can around injury and around fatigue. And we're spending a lot of time working with some external parties, especially around predictive fatigue, which is a really exciting time in this industry in this space, so biometric feedback tools. But for the overarching programs of Sano, it really is hard to put an ROI on it, which, you know, a lot of organizations in the past would say, well, if you can't give me a definitive outcome of what I'm spending on, why would I do it? Whereas now there's much more acceptance around, I can see the benefit of how my people are responding to each other, how they're learning together, how their thinking style has changed, they're reframing ideas and situations, how they're taking care of themselves. So it's definitely a case study by our clients. And most of our success has been word of mouth. We've built our business on our reputation, ensuring that what we do is at the highest standard, and then it's being passed on to other people. So while there are some metrics that we can measure, there are other parts that are also that are harder to measure. I mean, and that also goes into the space of mental well-being. You know, we're seeing a lot of change in this space as well that is harder to measure, because we're not just talking about mental health anymore or mental illness. We're talking about the well-being of somebody mentally, and what does that really mean? And it's, you know, the research isn't there yet, so it's getting a deeper dive into so many different facets of it, which for us, again, is really exciting. But like you said, can't always measure those components.
Yeah, and that has traditionally been an issue, but the industry really has been on a journey in that space of rethinking how they approach and evaluate these sorts of programs. And you just touched on biometrics, and I wanted to ask a question about technology. Obviously, you know, with COVID, you touched on the Zooms and the Teams and how we interact digitally, but how is technology playing a role in the holistic kind of health and wellness space that you guys implement and use in the support and programs that you run for organisations?
It is massive, I have to say. And I'm not the scientist on the team, so I won't talk too much to the back end of all the different things that we use. But it's changed the scope of what we can actually achieve and how we can actually help with interventions. So, you know, we look at biometrics on even physical musculoskeletal, on people's movements, so we can help with injury prevention. We can look at breathing techniques and measure outputs on heart rate variability, so how somebody's actually reducing their heart rate, their stress in stressful environments through exhaustion. We're in a fortunate space, like I said before, especially around fatigue. There is a lot of science and a lot of thought leaders out there looking at how we can actually help predict fatigue incidents, heat incidents in people, you know, well in advance of time, rather than, as we've seen in the past, we're looking at people who have, when they're in an incident, we can raise an alarm and help them. So technology is really advancing. To be honest, it's advancing well beyond my scope of understanding. I'll be honest, I sometimes sit there with the scientists and say, you have to explain that to me again, and I won't lie. But the what we actually see that it can do is phenomenal. And I think, again, being at the forefront, sometimes, Tara, this is where, you know, when you're leading the pack, it takes a little longer for everyone, not to catch up, but to buy in or believe that it is the right direction. And we saw that with mental health when we were at the sort of start of this pack a long time ago, and we've seen it now with fatigue, and we're seeing it again with bringing both mental and physical health together, that we are thought leaders, but we also know that there are a lot more people catching up and a lot more people now embarking on the journey with us as well. So digitally, and I think in technology, this space will change so rapidly. I think in the next, you know, 18 months, even to 2 years, we've been forced into it because of COVID. Definitely. We've also been forced into a lot of industries and a lot of areas where we're spending more time on research just to improve what we can in terms of our well-being. I mean, this is just a statistic that I wanted to talk to you about. Just in Victoria, and I know I've just thrown it out of left field, but in August alone, we found in Victoria there was 27,000 calls to Lifeline. So if we are spending time globally in technology and research on well-being and mental health, then it's going to hopefully have the impact that we need post coming out of COVID. If we've got this many people in what we'd call a crisis situation and needing to talk to an external party, can you imagine what's going on globally?
So I hope
technology really does advance so that we can support people on their life journey.
And the resource and energy industry is such a great partner in that regard, because it's on such a, you know, technology transformation trajectory in and itself, in terms of just fundamentally how the industry operates. And then fatigue management, heat management, even, you know, all of the different things that you've touched on are key interfaces into that transformation. So it sounds like a good partnership in terms of where both elements are coming from.
So I think you're right. And I think I probably should have mentioned that earlier. I feel that the resource mining sector in itself is advanced. As you said, technologically they're advanced, but they're also, even in their leadership skills and qualities, looking to always support their people. So we've always had a great opportunity to not trial, so to speak, but broach new ideas and technologies and programs with that sector, and had great uptake from the get-go, because they want to see the metrics or the outcomes and they will embark on it. There's not a lot of pushback, or as much. And I don't know why that's different from, let's say, corporate offices. I can't see where the difference sits, but it's a really interesting area that they are first to adapt. They're really early adapters to this. And as I said before, they were really early adapters to mental well-being way back in the day, before this was even a topic in corporate offices, or a topic on average scale.
Yeah, I think it's an area of research in and of itself. I mean, we're so incredibly proud, everyone that works in the industry, of how the industry has really adapted to the circumstances of the pandemic, and how the industry has really made sure that, as always, the health and safety of its people are number one, and having to navigate that in such a heightened environment has been so telling. But how people are still really, with the big adjustments on site and big adjustments in head office, are really still delivering for their company and for the Australian economy through this time period. But let's delve in a little bit about the impacts of COVID, because I'd really love your kind of observations of how you think generally, from a provider's perspective, the industry's going in terms of its response, but also how it's going just, you know, from a health and wellbeing perspective in this pandemic.
The uptake initially when we saw the first sort of shutdowns was that in early March, late February, early March, across Australia, there was a massive reaction, which was a little disappointing as well, because there was a lot of industry saying, oh, we need X, we need support, we need to do training on this. And there wasn't a roadmap or any structure or strategy around it. So, which was a little frustrating in some regards, because some organisations we hadn't worked with before, I just want X, I just want this. And it was like, but where is that supporting, and how can we continually help support you? I don't think a post is enough, and I won't name names. So, but besides that, I think as we've further down this journey, and, you know, we're here now in, where are we, September? Wow. I think the adaption has happened. People have got their own strategies in place. They know what they need to do. I think the next phase we're going to see is transitioning out of COVID, and how do we do that and support people who will go back to work, who won't go back to work? How do we support families who have continued this extended time away from families, have chosen to stay on site and not see their family for 3 to 4 months in particular situations? And what are we doing to make sure that the long-term effects of that, or what those long-term effects are, we don't know, but how can we try and be proactive now and give people the best tools they can to continue to survive, but move beyond surviving in COVID. And I would love to see this, and I think we sort of touched on it at the very start of before our interview, was moving from surviving into thriving. This whole space of, you know, just getting by and just getting to the next day, and the joke in Victoria is we'll just call it every day now, because the days of the week don't matter, we don't know where we
every
are
every day. Yeah.
And I think, you know, a lot of people in industry feel like that. So the roadmap out of COVID's got to be, you know, a little bit more structured and relying more heavily on combined efforts of organisations like Sano. And I think, you know, we partner up with a lot of different organisations in the mental health and wellbeing space. And we do that because the idea of just siloing what you know or what you're doing doesn't make sense. We want to work with everyone so we can get the most reach and support to as many people, especially Australians out there in our industry, and ensure that they've got the right tools, techniques and understandings to, again, thrive in life and get back to their own space of normal.
And I guess that's, you know, really interesting, and hearing and listening to the research about the different stages of people's response to COVID-19. Initially people thought, well, when is this going to finish? And I think, you know, as you say, with the second wave and with, you know, seeing what's happened in other countries around the world,
yeah,
prior to the vaccine, it's how do we make it normal, normalize it so people aren't in that highly anxious fight or flight stage for really, yep, long periods of time, which we know has such a negative impact on them physically and psychologically. And how do you normalize those different phases coming in and out of the different elements, whether there's, you know, hotspots and clusters and changes to borders and changes to physical locations of work and et cetera, et cetera. But do you see anything kind of unique or interesting that would be interesting to share with our listeners, Monique, of perhaps something that you're seeing that you're doing working with someone in the resource and energy industry in this area?
Yeah, absolutely. One of our clients who's in the mining sector, again, when this started in February, March, they held a meeting with all of their suppliers, and we were one of them, and they said, most of your work is, again, face-to-face. How are we going to deal with this? How are we going to combat? How will you help support our staff on the ground, and if you can't get out to our site? It was the advancement of technology to be able to say, we sat down with our team and worked through a strategy. It probably took us about 3 weeks to then execute a digital and remote learning piece. And we were really excited, but also hesitant, but lucky enough to have our clients supporting us and wanting to embark on this journey. So they didn't remove the importance of the mental health and wellbeing, and they didn't remove the physical health element through their sites. And I think, you know, hats off to clients like that, that really worked with us to ensure that they could continue to support their staff, and not just support them, but offer them more services in this time. And I think there's also been some clients that just didn't know how to adapt, or as they said, it wouldn't quite fit into what they were planning, which is fine, but then they removed it. So for us, it's exciting that we were able to digitally deliver that.
Wow, fantastic. And I knew it would be really interesting talking to you about, from a partnership and a provider perspective, what's happening in the industry. And I think I was right on the money, because Monique, you've really shared interesting and unique perspectives on holistic health and wellbeing, but specifically mental health with this today. So Monique, thank you so much for joining us on Resource People Podcast today.
Tara, thank you so much for having me. It was really awesome talking to you, and hopefully we'll get a chance to chat a bit more about some other parts of what Whānau does.
Absolutely. Thanks again for your time.
Thank you. Bye.
I hope you enjoyed the conversation with Monique as much as I did, and have taken some insights, again, from that unique provider perspective about mental health and wellbeing. I found it incredibly interesting to hear from Monique and how completely open and passionate she is in telling her own story and the journey that not just she, but Whānau Health and the companies that they partner with are on to improve mental health and wellbeing. I look forward to you joining me on the next edition of Resource People Podcast. Thanks so much.
Thank you for listening to the Resource People Podcast. We look forward to you joining us next time as we highlight the many great stories of the resources and energy industry. If you have any questions about the podcast, please email media@amma.org.au. Produced by Brad Thompson.